WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Since the publication of his 1986 novel, The Sports Writer, Richard Ford has become one of America's most acclaimed fiction writers. His last collection of short stories, Rock Springs, was set in Great Falls, Montana, near where Ford lives half of the year. His new novel, Wildlife, also takes place there. When Fresh Air critic Maureen Corrigan reviewed Wildlife, she said that if she had 3 hours instead of 3 minutes, she would just read us whole chunks of the book. Well, we still don't have 3 hours, but we do have Richard Ford to read a passage. Wildlife is set in 1960. The story is narrated by 16-year-old Joe Brinson. His father has gone off to fight a forest fire, and his mother is convinced that he won't be coming back. One night, Joe wakes up to the sounds of his mother making love to another man. After the man leaves, she finds Joe standing in the shadows.
She came down the hall to where I was, and she slapped me in the face with her open hand. And then she slapped me again with her other hand. "I'm mad at you," she said. "I didn't mean it," I said. "I'm sorry." I didn't try to move or raise my hand or do anything. Her bathrobe was open in front, and she was naked underneath. I could see her stomach and all of that. I had seen my mother naked before, but this was different, and I wished that she had her clothes on. "I wish I was dead," she said, and she turned around and walked back down the hall to her room. She was not crying, and she did not try to close the front of her bathrobe. When she got into the light that came out of the bathroom, she turned around and looked at me. Her face was angry. Her mouth seemed large and her eyes wide open. Her hands were made into fists, and I thought she might be thinking of coming back down the hall and hitting me again. Nothing seemed impossible. "You probably want to leave, don't you? Now, anyway," she said. "Go ahead. That's the way everything happens. People do things. There isn't any plan. What's next? Who knows?" She raised her hands with her palms up in a way I'd seen people do before. "If you've got a plan for me, tell me. I'll try to do it. Maybe it'll be better than this."
Richard Ford, you seem especially interested in these turning points in someone's life where things happen accidentally that permanently changes their life.
I think that's probably right. I don't know if I'm so interested in that in life. But
yeah, really.
I'm certainly interested in that in literature because, and that is to say as someone who would be a writer, because I think a lot of times people miss those little moments in their life when they could do things a little better than they do, when they could figure something out a little better. And one of the things literature does by promoting the notion that there are turning points, even if they aren't perceivable by us in our lives, is to get us to pay attention more, is to get us to listen to what people say to us and get us to try to say something unconventional and save ourselves.
Is there a moment in your life which you would describe as the time when things went out of control, out of all sense, which is one of the phrases that you use in your book?
Well, I mean, I can think of a number of times when things like that happened, and you just have to try to create a better set of consequences than the ones you might inherit. I mean, obviously, for me, I suppose it has something to do with why I've written stories and novels about 16-year-old boys. The morning in 1960 when my father died, and my mother kind of went out of her head there for a little bit, and certainly things were going out of all sense for me then. I had to figure out something to do, something to say to my mother, something to say to people when they came to the house. That was fairly impressing upon me.
In 1987, you wrote a memoir piece about your mother, and I was wondering if that piece was connected to the novel that you've just written.
I don't think so, except that I happen to be the one who wrote them both.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose all kinds of writing that one does gets connected through the agency of your enterprising intelligence. I'm certain that Wildlife is not an autobiographical book in any way. And that piece that I wrote about my mother in Harper's was certainly a piece of memoir out of my biography.
There's a section in the piece about your mother that reminded me of the section that you just read in Wildlife.
Uh-huh.
And that is, there's a night when your mother didn't come home. It was
all
getting
right.
late, and you went driving around town looking for her car, and you found it parked in front of a man's house. You banged on the door, he let you in, and there was your mother in
That's
this
right.
man's house with a drink in her hand.
That's right.
Quite safe and sound, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought about that and had occasion to think about it in the last month or so. And one of the things I've thought about it was that all I wanted to happen that night in my life was for my mother to call me on the phone and say, look, I'm someplace and I won't be back until some hour. And had she just done that, then I think I would have not gotten panicked and gone down there and started banging on doors. But then when I thought about it more, because I thought it was an innocent response to on my part. I certainly wasn't, I don't believe, trying to intervene between her and someone that she liked. All I wanted to do was be told what was going on. And as I thought about it, it became clear to me that one of the reasons my mother didn't call me was that she didn't know what to say when she wouldn't have known what to say when she called. And as a writer, I guess what I'm interested in is being able to try to imagine that conversation we might have had, which is by way of saying, I would like to write stories which say the apparently unsayable.
Well, in a way, it's making the inarticulate articulate. I mean,
that's right.
A lot of people don't express things like that, and that's why they wouldn't have called.
That's
but
right,
as a writer, you have to give them things to say and things that, you know, that they'd perceive that they might not really perceive in real life.
That's exactly right, and I have to make it up. Because I put people into dramatic situations in which silence might do or in which convention might not direct them about what they're supposed to say. And then I have to try to make up the next thing that they say. That's as close as I come to understanding what imagination is, in fact, in my life, which is putting people in situations in which what is said is not foregone and they have to invent the next thing they do.
In 1981, you wrote a magazine piece in which you said that When your novel, The Ultimate Good Luck, came out, you were living in the suburbs, and friends were always inviting you to their country homes, to show off their country homes. You couldn't see what the attraction was and why they wanted to convince you that they needed all of this. What were you so skeptical of?
Oh,
now that you're living in the country yourself.
Oh, let me see. That's a hard one to think about. I guess it was just a failure of me to get attached very well. For a guy who's moved around the country as much as I have, I don't get attached very easily, and I don't accommodate very easily. So I start off, or particularly when I was younger, I started off with a sense of skepticism about every new place that I moved to, and sort of learned it by overcoming some of that skepticism.
Well, you were even skeptical of book jackets with the writer posed outside in fields near rivers or farms with lyrical names. Did you ever pose that way yourself? I mean, I noticed on your new novel you're posed in a chair in front of a boarded-up window. Or at least that's
right.
What it looks like.
That's right. Actually, it's the back of an old mirror.
Oh.
It is. Well, when I published A Piece of My Heart, I had this notion that I would like to be photographed out standing in a soybean field, which was in Arkansas, because it happened to be a field that my aunt and I owned, and that I hoped that somebody would see me standing in that field and think of me as outstanding in my field. And but that's as far as I ever got with that.
That's great. A great pun. So is this a pun, too, with you in front of a boarded-up mirror? Is this like some kind of hidden statement about the end of narcissism?
Me denying myself, you know, immolating myself in my art? I don't know. I don't think so. I just think that's what the photographer found in our house that looked interesting to her and set it up behind me. Only you and I now know that that's a boarded-up mirror turned the other way.
I want to get back to one of the things that you said was one of those great turning points in your life when everything changed and very suddenly. And you said one of those moments was when you were 16 and your father died.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously that's something that's going to change your life a lot. But can you put your finger on how you think you kind of turned out differently because of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, My father was a countryman and had found a job out of the country, but always had kind of a country orientation. He's a big, sweet man, good-tempered, liked me a lot. And I know if he had lived on into my 17th and 18th year, that he would have had a prodigious and heavy hand on what I did after high school, which is to say I would have probably joined the Marines or I might have gone to a junior college. But as it was, because he was absent at that time, I had a lot freer rein over my own decisions. I mean, my mother was preoccupied with her life and liked the idea that I could make my own decisions. And just immediately, I was taking taking much more control of my decisions. Not that I made all such brilliant ones, but I made the ones I made and took responsibility for them myself. I didn't have that much parental direction after that. Another thing that was true about my father's death was that having been the child of older parents and seen a lot of my older aunts and uncles die during my young age, I was aware of how you're supposed to react to death and how you're supposed to react to the death of your loved ones. And when my father died, I was grieved and shocked and horrified, but I also felt this little feeling back in my mind that my life was suddenly more my own. I had to realize that the way I felt was the way I felt, and I felt a little bit freed.
Did you feel a little bit guilty about feeling that way?
Yeah, I'm not much of one to feel guilty. I just felt odd about it and realized that this is how I feel, and I'm going to have to try to make a virtue out of it.
So is that sense of your life being a little bit more your own that enabled you to become a writer, I guess?
I suppose so. I know, but in Jackson, where I grew up, Jackson, Mississippi, there was a nice free-floating sanction in Jackson anyway because Miss Welty lived there, and it was already in the air that if you wanted to be a writer, it was all right. It was fine for you to be a writer. She was a writer living there in town. It was okay. It was okay. So it wasn't hard to think when I got to be 24 that I could turn my life toward being a writer. It as a sort of a vocational choice, it wasn't an outrageous choice to make.
Richard Ford, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, gee, Terry, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks.
Richard Ford has a new novel. It's called Wildlife, and it's published by Atlantic Monthly Press. This is Fresh Air.